Hi. So we spend much of the year traveling around the world. Our last trip was to Colombia and Lima and Buenos Aires and Mexico City and Guadalajara. Next week we go to France, Paris, Montpellier, Israel, and Kiev, I think. Is that right? Something like that. And then we teach in Colombia, 1,000 people came to the talk. And in Guadalajara, 1,000 people came to the talk. He organized it. So that's sort of more like how to succeed in your life and how to be happy in your relationships and how to have good health, that kind of thing. Then 4 times a year, I get to teach what I want to, which is what I was trained in, which is ancient Tibetan scripture. And so 4 times a year, I get a chance to teach in the old way. And I think it's a good balance. I appreciate the other work, and I think it helps thousands of people. But I think the wellspring of it, or the source of it, is the ancient original scriptures. And I think it's important for those of us who are serious or those of us who are teaching, I think it's good to get the original scriptures. So I'm happy that you came. Some people came from Germany and other countries, Mexico City, Tepoztlan, Guadalajara. And I'm grateful that you came. Because I think these 10-day sessions, they give you the foundation of the rest, okay? And I don't teach this way in the rest of the world. It's only in Phoenix that I give the original presentation. So I'm glad you came, especially those of you who are teaching. Because I think, first of all, you will get the foundation that you need to teach well. And the foundation for your practice. And I think you'll also find that as we go through this text, even this week, many of the things that I teach, that I've taught you over the last, I don't know, zillion years, they're here. So you'll say, oh, we heard him say that. And I was trained in this text. I think this text is the most beautiful. I was having lunch with some people a while back, and we were all telling our favorite book. You know, one person said the Bible, one person said, I don't know, some kind of novel, James Michener novel, you know. I said, mine is Nandu Lakchang. Mine is Liberation in the Palm of Your Hand. And I think it's the greatest book ever written. And I'm a student of books, you know. We just finished 14 years of cataloging books in Russia. Tibetan books, 134,000 books. And, you know, I had to look at them and help catalog them. But I think this is the greatest, you know. So I think this is an important book for your practice. Today, by the way, it was written by the teacher, my teacher's teacher, who was also the teacher of His Holiness's teacher. So the current Dalai Lama's teacher, his teacher wrote this book. And the current Dalai Lama's teacher, this was actually a series of lectures given in Tibet in, I think, 1920s. And then he wrote down the lectures, human tape recorder. And he spent much of his life organizing this book. And then he was selected as the teacher of the Dalai Lama because of that work, I think. It was such a great book and such a blessed thing. So we'll be going through, we've gone, this process of going through this book will take 10 years. It's about 800 pages Western way. And I think we're in the second year. I don't remember. We're in the second year. Yeah. We're just starting the second year, I think. We have 8 more years to go. Maybe it'll be 12 years. I'm not sure yet. Okay? But it's a beautiful book. My teacher taught it to us for 20 years. He taught it twice through. And then I heard it a third time because he taught it to another group, and I was his driver. So I got to hear it the third time also. So I love this book. So tonight, the subject that we are starting for the next 10 days is how to prepare for meditation, okay? And that's a beautiful, beautiful, important subject. for anybody. I don't think you even have to be a Buddhist to listen to this lecture, to listen to these teachings, and appreciate what it is to learn to meditate. So he's not actually going to get into the meditation instructions. We sort of did that. But he's going to talk very carefully about how do you prepare for a meditation session, which, you know, like in sports or anything else, it's the preparation that makes the meditation great. If you know how to prepare for meditation, then your meditation will be fantastic. And if you just sit down and try to start meditating, it's like trying to run a race without warming up, without knowing how to warm up. So it's very important to learn these six steps. They're called Jorcha Drup. Say Jor. Cha. Drup. Jorcha means preliminary practices for meditation, before you meditate. And Drup means six. Okay, so there are six special practices that you do before you start a meditation session. If you learn them, this ancient teaching, and if you do them, your meditations will be awesome. And if you don't learn them, and you just try to sit down and meditate, it's like, I don't know, trying to start a car on a cold day, you know, and just starting it and taking off, and it will hurt the engine, you know. So you should learn these six. That's the goal of this week. Try to come every night, okay? I'm teaching this once in my life. This is it, okay? Then it's your problem, all right? So you should try to come to all the sessions. There are homeworks, okay? And you should learn them well. You should do the homeworks. I had a guy in Boston, I don't know, 15 years ago. He said, I refuse to do the homework. I said, then you have to leave the class. He said, okay, I'll do the homework. Then that was on the Wheel of Life. He was so happy afterwards. He wrote a symphony. He was a conductor, and he wrote a symphony about the Wheel of Life and about the homeworks. Okay, I'm not kidding. So take the homeworks home, learn the homeworks. There will be meetings with, I don't know, at Starbucks or at Paradise Cafe. You can sit down with other people. You can do your homeworks together. It's an excuse to hit on somebody in the class if you like them. I encourage it. I mean, the homeworks. And you'll learn a lot more, okay? If you sit with your fellow students and you talk about the ideas and what you heard, you'll learn a lot more and you'll have a lot more fun, okay? And you'll meet other people. I always say you might meet somebody from Germany, or they might invite you to Hamburg, or somebody might invite you to Mexico City, you know? And then nice collaborations take place, you know, between people. So I encourage you to go to the sessions. We'll talk more about them before the end of the class. Do your homework, okay? It's not difficult. I know you didn't do it since high school. I don't care. It's good for you. It's really good for you. You can sit to these lectures for 10 days and not learn anything and not remember anything. I've seen it many times, okay? If you take yourself through the homeworks, then you'll be able to teach it, okay? Like, I listened carefully to my teacher, and I learned every single Tibetan word in almost 1,000 pages, right? And now it's your job. You don't have to learn the Tibetan, but you should at least learn all the ideas clearly. And then it's your responsibility to teach it to other people. I consider in the Tibetan tradition, if you take a teaching like this, it's your responsibility to pass it on to other people, okay? So take notes as if you were going to have to teach it tomorrow, okay? That's your, we consider that in the Tibetan tradition, that's your responsibility to get it straight so that you could teach it tomorrow. If someone asked you tomorrow, what did he teach last night? You should be able to teach it accurately, clearly, okay? So please don't, please take it seriously, all right? Buddhism has continued for 2,500 years. I think it's like 42 generations. And it's because people have learned it and passed it on to the next generation. You don't want to be the losers who break a 2,500 year tradition, okay? You have to pass it on to the next generation, all right? And it's hard because it's changing countries, right? It's going from Tibet to America or Germany or Mexico. And you're going to have to work a little harder to inject it into your culture. Okay, the jump is a little bit harder. The next generation will be easier. I think it's fun to be the pioneering generation, to be the first generation in a country. Okay? But you should get it straight. You should have a notebook. You should be taking notes. Okay? All right. And I'll ask you, I'm going to go straight through the, I'm doing it the old way. Okay? There was an advertisement on TV when my lama was watching TV. I never had a TV in my life. But I used to sit with him and watch his TV. And it was some Merrill Lynch or Smith Barney. And there was this old guy and he said, "We make money the old way. We earn it." And you have to earn it, okay? I'm going to teach you the old way for a week. And you got to hang in there, okay? It's going to go fast and it's a lot of material and it will be tiring. But you have to be a little bit tough, okay? In Tibet, this class, the original class took place, you know, in the snow. And they did it for 12 hours a day. And there was no loudspeaker. And there was a couple thousand people there. And they toughed it out. They sat on the gravel in the snow and toughed it out, you know. So you can tough out, you know, a little bit of heat in Arizona or something like that. That's not so bad, okay? So work hard, all right? And pass it on. Learn it well enough to pass it on, especially the hamburgers. Okay. So of the six preliminary practices, the first one is straightening up your room. Okay, the first preparation for meditation is to straighten up the space where you are going to meditate. All right, and the Lama Pabongka Rinpoche, who taught this, he was answering complaints. People said, "Oh, come on, you know, I can clean up my room on Monday; it will still be clean on Friday. I don't have to clean it up every morning." You know, that's not a very important practice. And he was ragging on those people. He was saying, they don't understand anything, okay? Straightening up your room and your house before you meditate is perhaps the most important meditation practice of all, okay? And he quoted a famous story, Chudapandaka, okay? And we went through that already. This was a guy in ancient India who was so stupid, he couldn't learn a single verse of scripture, all right? You're talking in a country where people would memorize tens of thousands of pages, right? He tried to teach him a simple mantra, and like Om Mani Padme Hum, right? And when he got the Om, he forgot the money. And when he got the money, he forgot the Om. You know, he was so stupid. So Lord Buddha asked him to sweep the temple where the monks stayed. So the monks they're messy, okay? When you have a big prayer with the monks and you hand out tea, Tibetan tea and bread, then afterwards everything's a mess. The monks all go home and then the young monks have to clean up. So he stuck this monk with the young monks and he had to take a broom and sweep up the temple every morning. And he gave him a little thing to recite while he was cleaning up the temple, which was sort of like clean the dirt, get rid of the dirt, okay? It was just that. And at the beginning, he learned clean the dirt, and he forgot get rid of the dirt. And then at the end, he said he got get rid of the dirt, but he forgot clean the dirt. And then he was working really hard, okay? Then in the story, these nuns, okay, in the old days, this is the patriarchal society of Buddhism up to now. It's changing. But up till now, it was very male-oriented. We're trying to change that, and we're getting some, you know, resistance. But anyway, in those days, a nun could not teach the nuns. A monk had to teach the nuns. So they would select one monk to teach the nuns. So the nuns in Lord Buddha's time came to him and said, "We need a monk. We'd like to have some teachings. Can you send a monk to teach us?" So he said, "Yeah, I got this guy named Chudapandaka." And then the nuns were really, excuse me, pissed off. And they said, yeah, we heard about him. He's the guy who can't remember Om after he says money, you know. You know, he's the guy who can't remember anything. You're going to send him to teach us? And they were very angry, you know. So they prepared a surprise for Chudapandaka. They made a throne that was too big. Very high throne. It's traditional to teach Dharma on a throne like this. You're not supposed to teach sitting on a chair or standing up. You're supposed to sit on a throne, not because you're important, but because the teaching is important. That's tradition. So they made him a really high throne, and they made him no way to get up to the top. And they thought, oh, we'll embarrass him, you know. So he came in to teach the nuns. Oh, and they also went around town and invited thousands of people to the teaching so he would be more embarrassed. Okay, they said, this guy can make you see emptiness in one night, you know. So they got, everybody in the town came, and there's a big, you know, mass of people. And then he walked in, and he looked up at the throne, and he asked himself, did they make the throne high out of respect, or did they make it high to hurt me, you know, to embarrass me, because I'd have to climb up on it, you know. And then he read their minds, and he saw that it was malicious, that they had made the throne high out of maliciousness. Then he got up, he walked up to the front of the throne. You're supposed to bow to the throne before you teach. And then suddenly, he flew up to the top. He was sitting on the top. His body levitated to the top of the throne, you know. And then that's what we're picking up, okay? That's where we ended in the Prescott retreat last time. And that's where we're picking up now. Ready? Here we go. Now we're starting the class. Sengitir Dukte. He sat down on the lion throne. So sometimes we call it a lion throne. And in the old days, there were four or eight lions holding up there were pillars carved like lions. Nowadays, you can see if you go to Hong Kong, every bank has two lions out front. Snow lions. So this was the old custom. Simodak, Kowadawasum, the Sikche Chik, Sumade, the Nyensen Dunki, part of Chepetol. Oh, sisters. Simodak means, oh, sisters. Would you enjoy it if I were to explain the meaning of the single line of scripture, which it took me 3 months to memorize? You know, would you like me to teach that? Okay, tro. Dela, chamdendeki lunga yiki dipa michashing. There was the meaning of those, of that line that I was taught, sweep the dirt, clean the dirt. Chamdendeki, the Buddha, that's explained in a verse by Lord Buddha where he said, don't do anything wrong in your actions, don't do anything wrong in your words, and don't think wrong, okay? Don't do those things. Means Lord Buddha was, when he taught me to sweep the temple, he was teaching me to give up the 10 bad deeds, okay? So Buddhism, like Christianity, has, what do you call it? Commandments, okay? 10 commandments. They're almost the same, which is very interesting. No killing, no stealing, no sexual misconduct, no lying, no splitting up people with your speech, no harsh words, no idle gossip, no being sad when other people get something good, no being happy when someone else has a problem, and understand that the world comes from you. No wrong thinking about where stuff comes from, okay? Somebody hurts you, understand that it's coming from what you did last week. And don't get upset. Just stop what you're doing. Those are the 10. He said, when the Buddha taught me how to sweep, he was really teaching me how to keep the 10 good deeds. Okay? Tento. Jiten kun le shepe pobo nga dang yongzin shepe ni ducha sheran ti musungi yongzin tento. Then there was another verse of scripture by Lord Buddha that said, jiten kun le. He was talking about the five parts of a person. Yongzin shepani, and then there's a word called yongzin. Say yongzin. Yongzin. So there's an ancient teaching in the Perfection of Wisdom Sutra. It's called yongzin. Yongzin means takes care of you in every way. And it's a teaching on guru, or it's a teaching on teachers. Okay, yongzin means teachers. Nowadays in Tibet, in this last generation, there are only two Yongzin. Yongzin has become a title for the teacher of the Dalai Lama. Okay, so the Dalai Lama is born, the old one passes away, the new one is born. They test like 50 kids. Every parent wants their kid to be the Dalai Lama so they can live in the White House, which is the Potala, right? And so there's big competition to see who's the right kid. They give the kid all these rosaries and bells and stuff that the old Dalai Lama used to use, and they mix them up with other people's rosaries and bells, and then the right kid will say, this is my rosary and this is my bell, you know? He's like 3 years old, okay? So Yongzin came to be a name for the teacher of the Dalai Lama, okay? In what the Lord Buddha taught the dull monk, Yongzin means the leader Of Dutchak, say Dutchak. Shedang. Dimuk. Dutchak. Okay, we gotta talk about something. In the monastery, if you don't recite what the teacher asks you, they hit you on the head with a rosary. Okay? And I've been known to do that. Okay? So you have to speak a little louder. Or I might have somebody do it on the way out just to everybody. Okay? Dutchak. Shedang. Dimuk. That would be democratic, right? Okay. These are the three root negative emotions in the human mind. Okay? Dutchak means to want things and not understand where they come from. Okay? To want things and not understand where they come from. That's wrong. Is it wrong to want things? Is it wrong to enjoy donuts? No. Okay? Is it wrong to enjoy good music? No. Is it wrong to enjoy our music? It's also not wrong. Okay? In what the word means, not wanting, means not wanting ignorantly. Okay? What's ignorant? Ignorant means you get upset or you try to take something from somebody else that you want, like a boyfriend or like some money or something like that. What's the intelligent way to want something? Give it to somebody else, okay? The thing you want, then give it first to someone else. Is that wrong? No, that's enlightened. That's enlightened action, okay? If you want more donuts, what do you call it? Churro or youjiao? You know, then you have to give them to somebody else, okay? The thing that you want, you should give to somebody else. That's not wrong. In this case, it's ignorant liking. Try to take something from somebody else. I want more oil for my country, so we will have a war. You see what I mean? That's wrong. Shedang means hatred, okay? To hurt other people. People bother you, people hurt you, people criticize you on the television, right? And you get this reaction, you're like, oh, I'm not a bad person, they're wrong, you know? I should write a letter to them, or I should, you know, debate with them or argue, right? Something comes up in your heart, like, oh, they said something bad about me, I should attack them. They're also bad people. You know, I should attack them. That's shedang. Shedang means hatred. If you don't like something, if something's happening to you that you don't like, if someone's criticizing you, for example, where is it coming from? You've been criticizing other people last week, last month, okay? If you don't like being criticized, then examine your own heart and stop being critical of others. And then the TV will say, oh, you're wonderful. Okay? All right? That's just basic, okay? So he taught the nuns about these ideas. Dimuk means the ignorance behind attacking when you are attacked, and the ignorance behind hurting other people when you want something. Okay? And he taught the nuns about that. Okay? Dutcha shede tumusugi yongzin tendo. Says, sikte chetsam ki dun gyachir temba. He taught only two lines of a four-line verse of poetry. He didn't even teach the third and fourth lines. He didn't get to it, all right? Sokchak chi ni tong denba tongne. 12,000 people saw emptiness because of his teaching, okay? 12,000 people saw emptiness because of his teaching on the first two lines. Denba tong ne kachi ki debo shipo chire gundu che. There are four levels of... there are four levels after you see emptiness, okay? Emptiness is the first one, right? Jundushupa, stream enter, Chirongwa, come back once to the desire realm. Chirmiyongwa, don't come back to the desire realm. Dachomba, reach nirvana. There are four levels, okay? Some of his listeners reached all four levels, okay? The first one is seeing emptiness directly. Some of his listeners, from hearing his explanation of the two lines, reached nirvana, okay? In that city. Okay. That's kind of cool. Nundiche, kaji gi niente dang rang sang ye den tepa chen bote so chanju de semke. Everybody got semke, many people got semke. Okay. What's semke? Bodhicitta, okay. What's bodhicitta? They call ultimate love. There's some really bad translation. What is that? What do they call that? Really bad. What do you call it when you give lots of money away and you're a nice person? Altruistic mind. Yeah. Everybody's like, what's altruism? You know, I haven't heard altruistic since I was 6 or something like that. What it means is very simple, you know. We talk about it a lot in the DCI. I'll give you a quick example of bodhicitta. Bodhicitta is ultimate love. Love for the entire world. Love for every living creature, okay? But in a practical sense, how do you get bodhicitta? What is bodhicitta practically? How could I have bodhicitta? It's not to sit there in front of your altar and say, oh, Dani Sanchen Tanchen La Yishinamaleha, you know, it's not this kind of just blah, blah verse, okay? What would real bodhicitta be? Sometimes I think about it. We teach these seminars. We try to teach people to get prosperity, or we teach them how to have better health. If I give a lecture on Buddhism, 80 people come. If I give a lecture on yoga, 200. If I give a lecture on business, 500. If I give a lecture on how to find a boyfriend, 800. Okay? St. Bartholomew's Church, not kidding. In New York. Okay? It's the record for New York. It was about how to find a boyfriend, okay? Then we'd say, I'll tell them, of course, if you want a boyfriend, you have to make the karma. And how do you make the karma? You take care of a lonely person, okay? You take care of, for example, an elderly person, right? I'm going tonight after the talk to take care of an elderly person, okay? I have one on call. I sleep at her house tonight and tomorrow night. And I cook for her and I take care of her stuff. Fix up her house, okay? So we tell people that. If you want to find a partner, then help an elderly person. Help someone who's lonely. Okay? Then bodhicitta means what would happen if the whole world believed that was true? What would happen if the whole world believed that to get rich you have to give away lots of money? What would happen? I mean, you'd have a perfect world. You'd have a world where everyone was competing to give away things. And there would be long lines in front of the nursing homes of people waiting, you know. She's busy today. She can't see you till Friday. You know, she has 40 people are signed up to see her this week, right? It would be the opposite of the current situation where people ignore people who are elderly, right? So bodhicitta in this case would be thinking, when I go tonight to visit the old lady, thinking what it would be like if my action triggered a larger movement among other people. What would happen if Geshe Michael did something and it worked and everybody else copied him? You know, in the world, what would happen? There'd be long lines outside of nursing homes. I think the men, the young ladies and men in the lines would get to know each other. But to imagine that, imagine being at ground zero of a movement where people try to share with others the things they want, right? That's bodhicitta. So don't think it's like something like, that's nothing, okay? That's just blah, blah, okay? Just practice the teaching of providing for someone else the things you want. And imagine as you do it, that you are changing the culture of the world, and that's bodhicitta. You are changing the behavior, the way in which the world gets things. Okay? Think that's real bodhicitta, and you can have it. It's not some like thing you can't have or you have to practice for 20 years to get it. You can have it tomorrow. Okay? I'm gonna act in an enlightened way. The things I want, I will give to others. The things I don't want, I will stop doing to others. And other people will copy me, and the world will change. I will help start the change in the world. That's bodhicitta, okay? Anyway, he got people to reach bodhicitta. Now, some of you may not know there's 3 levels of bodhicitta, okay? There's 3 things called bodhicitta. To want the enlightenment of 3 different tracks. So I'm not going to go much into that. There's lower motivations. I would like to have a happy life. It's the lowest motivation. And I think it's great, okay? It's not like you have to skip it. It's like you have to build on it, okay? There are three levels of motivation. You're not supposed to, like, skip the first one and go straight to the third or something like that. You're supposed to build on them, okay? What are they? Number one, I would like to have a happy life, okay? I would like to have enough money. I would like to have companionship. I would like to have good health. That's number one. Number two would be something like, after I die, I would like to have beautiful things happen to me and not terrible things. Okay? After I die, I would like to have nice things happen. And then number three, I would like to have all people protected from all forms of suffering. Okay, like that. So he got his listeners to those three motivations in his one little talk. Then almost everybody in the audience began to understand the idea of shelter, going for refuge, okay? So Buddhism says, if you're a Christian, you become a Christian by what? What makes you a Christian in Christianity, in most Christianity? What's the thing that you have to do to become a Christian? You got to get baptized. They got to sprinkle your head and, you know, then you're a Christian. In Buddhism, the way you become a Buddhist, is to take shelter. Okay, take shelter. Then what does that mean? Sort of lower school Buddhists have said, you have to find a Buddha picture or a Buddha statue and you have to go in front of it and say, I like the Buddha. You know, I take shelter in the Buddha. What do they say? Nano Buddha Gacchami Sharanam. Dharma Gacchami, Sharanam, Sangha Gacchami. This is the big thing for millions of Buddhists, okay? That's sort of a lower idea. It's not going to protect you too well, okay? To keep a Buddha picture in your house is not going to save you from indigestion or other problems, okay? It's not very practical. What is real shelter? We were in the prison last week. We visited the prison. These guys are doing great work in the prisons, man. They're big, really popular now in the prisons. They're trying to get them to do something wrong so they have to stay there. We talked about it on Sagandawa, right? We had a ceremony for some of the prisoners took refuge. Shelter means what? If you don't like being criticized by people, then stop criticizing other people. That's shelter. That's all. You don't have to keep a Buddha picture in your house. It's not going to help you that much anyway. If you like it, if it's pretty for you, go ahead. That's okay. But that's not going to protect you. What will protect you is knowledge, understanding. I'm criticized this week by many people because I was thinking critically of many people. And that's protection. Okay, and then you can stop it. That will protect you. Okay, so he got most people in the audience to understand that much. Okay, they didn't see emptiness, but at least they understood that. Okay? Almost everybody understood the shelter thing. Okay, touching the question. Dene lama gyalche tseru omba dang. Then he finished the teaching and he came back to there's an ancient city in India called Shravasti. In the north. I went there. I spent a millennium there, sitting where the Buddha taught the diamond cutter. It was very powerful. I spent the midnight I was there, sitting on that stone. Nobody else cared. It's hard to find it. But anyway, I went to Shravasti and I was sitting there. And then that garden is called Jetavani. It's 2,500 years old. It's still there. You should go sometime. It's a beautiful garden. It's a fantastic garden. That's where the Buddha taught the Diamond Cutter Sutra, okay? So anyway, he went back to the Jetavani garden to see Lord Buddha. Omadan tumbe lama dingen yentu sem gyurala kepa namgi chok yino she lung tembare. And the Buddha declared, Chuddhapantaka is the greatest of my disciples. And he is most skilled at teaching and changing other people's hearts. Of all my disciples, he's the best, okay? How did he get there? Sweeping. What? His meditation space. Don't forget why we're talking about this story, okay? Don't forget. he cleaned up his room, okay? And he swept up his meditation space. What's the big deal about the meditation space? Why do the lamas insist? They insist that you do it, okay? In the monastery, we have clay floors. They are made from mud, and they shine. Why? You get two towels, and you're barefoot, right, in the monastery. And you skate around your room on the towels. They teach you to do this. It's really cool. You should do it on your linoleum. And you put your feet on the two towels, and you skate through the house like a skateboard, you know? And it shines the floor up really nice. And they teach you to do this before you meditate, okay? You have to do that. Why? And I have friends, I have good friends in this very room whose houses are disaster. And their rooms are a disaster. And everything's stacked and thrown around and big piles of junk. And just you walk in and it's disturbing to the mind. They say in the scripture that the condition of your environment will shift your consciousness, okay? It will determine your level of consciousness, okay? That idea of Zen temple is a very good idea. Beauty, to have beauty around the room, garden around the house, and that the room should be very, very beautiful, elegant. I like to say elegant, okay? The place where you meditate should be elegant. I have this dream to make Diamond Mountain elegant, but it's gonna be a while. Okay, but I'm working on it. It should be elegant, okay? The room should be elegant. So think about that. Try to make your room elegant. Then your mind state will be elegant. Then you sit down and you meditate, and the meditation is unbelievable, okay? So start at least with picking up the underwear off the floor and stuff, and the socks. And you can just throw them in the closet and try to close the door, you know? But as your room is, so shall your meditation be, okay? If the room is clean, orderly, it doesn't have to be, what do you call it, anal, okay? We had a lady who lived next door to me, 7th Avenue, and I think you're near there, you guys. I was at 7th Avenue in Glendale. I lived there. And there was a lady next door, and I hated to visit her house because my mom made me go over there. She had this beehive hairdo, and she had beautiful carpet and beautiful sofas and stuff, but she covered them in plastic, in vinyl, because she didn't want them to get dirty. And so to walk across the carpet or to sit on the sofa was very uncomfortable. We're not talking about that, okay? I think if you do that, then your mind will become sort of like vinyl, okay? So the room should be elegant, clean, cool. And it can be your style, you know, whatever your style is, retro, sick. My style is 1968, whatever your style is. We're going to sing you 1968 songs this week. But make it your own style, okay? I slept in Alejandro's room that he grew up in, and it's cool. It's very clean. I think his mom probably cleans it before I get there. I don't know. But it's not cold, it's warm. And there are nice photos around, and there, you know, it has a warm feeling. So make it your own. Make the room your own, but make it elegant. In some way, make it elegant. Because your mind will be the same. If you try to meditate in a messy room, it's hopeless. Okay? You won't be able to. Okay? Make the room elegant. All right? With your own style. All right? Okay. That's actually where we stopped last time, okay? So here we start. Okay. Yeah, Ningbo, we're going to need that in a while, okay? Dena gomdung khel chewala kedaso kelmiche nyamche minyan. Therefore, says Pabong Rinpoche, if somebody tells you it's not important to clean up your room before meditation, don't listen to them, okay? Minyan means don't listen to them. They're wrong. Kimda gunme sejin ki kyang gyalche ki tsel ki kunga rawar chaktar chepa nyenreshin ongbala. There was a kimdak. Kimdak means he was not a monk. He was a householder, okay? His name was Gunme Sejin. Say Gunme. Sejin. Anatta Pindada, okay? Kyang gyalche ki tsel ki kunga rawar He was a wealthy person who helped build that garden called Jetavani, okay? I'm dying to build some gardens at Diamond Mountain. I would really want to build some beautiful gardens, you know? We started, right? Dennis and Sierra put in some rose bushes. It's a start, okay? Of making it elegant, right? So anyway, y'all take yourself to Kungurawa. Kungurawa means a pleasure park. Like kings would go there to read a book or play on their lutes or hunt foxes and stuff like that. Kungurawa, Chakdar Chepa Nyenreshin, he used to come, that wealthy man. He was like Bill Gates or something like that. He paid for that garden, which is still there. He bought it for the Buddha, okay? And it was very expensive. I think he had to give his weight in gold or something like that. But he used to go there every morning to sweep up, to clean up the leaves in the garden. Okay, he went every morning to sweep in the garden. Okay, Ombala, Ninchi Kimdat Ma Komshing. One day he didn't have time to go to the garden of Jetavani and clean up. You know, you got to clean up dead leaves and, you know, deadhead the roses, if you know what that is. Chakdar Chekin Shen Mepala. And he couldn't find anybody else to do the sweeping. So Sangye Rangni means what? Sangye. The Buddha himself heard that no one was sweeping that day. Chakserk Yeldap Tabu. And he extended his hand, which was like the gold, the bow of a golden tree. Okay? And he took the broom and Chakdar Zepa. The Buddha himself, an enlightened being, right? The only one in the universe, right? I mean, in this part of the universe. He said, nobody's sweeping today. I have to do it. Okay? He swept himself. Okay? Swept up the place. Chakdar Zepa, Dona Sungyo. There's a mistake in the text. Those of you who care, it should be Dona. That's stated in the sutras, that he swept the garden himself because no one else was there to do it. Sijin. Daki Lama Rinpoche. Then my teacher, who's me? Pabong Rinpoche. Okay, his own teacher. Daki Lama Rinpoche, my lama, he gave us the following story. Kunsi Gyalwe Wangbo, Kunarim Ki Jorche Nyam She Zepe. Kunsik means, any guesses? Kunsik. Tamche Kimba. Kun Kien, all-knowing, the omniscient one, the Buddha, okay? But in Tibet, it's a word for the Dalai Lamas, okay? Kun Sik means sees all things, okay? Kun Sik, Gyalwe Wangbo means the Lord of all Buddhas. Is a in Tibet, it's used for the Dalai Lamas. Kun Na Rim Ki, successive generations of Dalai Lamas, Jorchu Nyamshe Zepe, they studied these six preparations and they followed them. Okay, the lineage, the succession of Dalai Lamas. What's this current one? What number? 14. Okay, my Lama was ordained by the 13th. Okay, he was a little kid. Dalai Lama was old. Anyway, Zepe, Chidoki Chakme Pombo Semosene, they swept the Potala Palace. Okay, these big Dalai Lamas, they got up every morning and they swept the palace. The Dalai Lama swept the palace, okay? And they had kusha brooms. You ready, Jigme? I need those kusha brooms. Where are they? Yeah, but I'm over here and the altar's over there. It's a yellow cloth in the back.
Okay.
So I actually made you a demonstration of what those brooms look like. This is called kusha grass. It's a holy grass from India. It's very fragrant and it's considered very good under a meditation seat. Like you will have powerful meditation. We buy these brooms and we take them apart. It's good if you can find one that's all kusha grass, the handle also. And then you take them apart and you spread the kusha. We'll talk about it later, but it's considered a very holy grass. It has a very fragrant smell. So anyway, the Dalai Lamas would sweep the Potala Palace with these kusha grass brooms. But after a while, they would wear them down. The text says, Chakme Pumbo, what do you call this part of a broom? I don't know. the end of the broom, okay? The end of the broom, Chabe Pumbo, became like, Sene means it wore out, Pumbu Juma Tarsoma, and it became, you ready, Ningbo? Not ready. It became shaped like a donkey's tail, okay? Pumbu Juma means the donkey's tail. So I never saw a donkey's tail up close. So I went on the internet. And the point is that their tails are truncated. They don't like go out like a horse's tail. They just stop. And the Dalai Lama's brooms always ended up like that. Okay, so now you know if you read this text and they're talking about donkey's tails, what they're talking about, okay? It means they wore down the brooms till nothing, okay? They wore out brooms on the floor of the Potala Palace, which has 1,000 rooms. I don't think they did all 1,000 rooms. Okay. So what you are Sangha Serpo Chiba Mambo Nangtendu Jelgyu Yupa Shintu Nechewe. Then they would take the brooms and they would wrap them in yellow silk. Okay, this is supposed to be yellow silk. It's really just cheap cotton. Okay. And then they would place that on the altars in the Potala Palace and people would worship them. Okay, people would worship the worn-out brooms, okay, on the altar. And the Dalai Lamas thought that was worthy of worship. Why? It's step number one is straightening up your room before you meditate. And the instrument with which you clean up your room becomes holy. Okay? It's cool. It's really cool. All right? Jiba Mambo Nangtan Jyadu Yipa Shindu Neche Wen Namtar Yimbar Sung. My teacher, whose teacher? Pabongka Lama's, Pabongka Rinpoche's teacher used to say, ne, that's a ne, a personal practice. Ne, what's ne? In Sanskrit, marma hatta, ne dhanam. Crucial point. For example, in the middle of a chakra, when you're doing yoga, you're supposed to hit a ne, okay? Ne, there are nes in the body, mama. In Sanskrit, marma, sorry, marma. Marma is the root of it is mar, which means what? What's amrta? No death, okay? Amrta means the thing that gives you no death. Mur means the Sanskrit root for death, like mortuary or murder, okay? Comes from that, okay? So marma means the place on an enemy that if you hit them with the sword in the right place, they die within one minute. That's called marma, okay? So marma means crucial point. In yoga, it means when you do yoga a certain way, you're supposed to hit these crucial points in your chakras, and then your body will change, okay? Why did I bring that up? I was talking about marmahatta, striking the crucial point during a yoga practice, okay, inside the chakra. Why did I talk about that? Because he uses the same word here, and he says, cleaning up your room is a marmahatta for your meditation, okay? You want to strike to the heart of your meditation, clean up your room. Straighten up your room, okay? Before you start the meditation. Okay. By the way, on a practical level, just do a little bit every day, okay? Like, don't go crazy the first day and then quit. Like, do 5 minutes every day. And after a week, the thing will be clean, and the maintenance is about zero. You know, you're supposed to do a little bit every day, we'll get into it, but don't go crazy. You know, like, clean out a square foot every day of your junk. And then after a couple of weeks, it's elegant. The room will be elegant, okay? So don't go crazy. Just do a little bit. Force yourself, okay? All right. Cherry Namtang Yimbar Sung. Then, by the way, I'll stop in about 10 minutes, okay? So we'll take a break. Rang Dena Rangre Le Dangboe Nenten Che Ge. Therefore, those of us who are Le Dangboa, say Le Tang. Boa. Le Tang Boa. What's le mean? Le means karma or work, okay? Dang Boa, do you know Dumbo? Dumbo means first. Le Tang Boa is the Tibetan word for a tenderfoot or a beginner. Okay, like someone who's just starting. What? Their meditation practice, okay? Compared to? Who did he just talk about? Who was sweeping the papala? The Dalai Lamas, okay? Compared to the Dalai Lamas, we are Lei Dongbo. Okay? We are, he says, those of us who are just beginners, okay? Meaning those of us who aren't Dalai Lamas, all right? Lei Dongbo. Nenten Chegu. We gotta really work hard on this practice. We gotta concentrate on this practice. We have to learn to straighten up our room. Okay? If your mom didn't succeed, Pabok Rinpoche is trying again. Okay. He said, this is an interesting point. It doesn't matter if the room is already straightened or not. You should straighten it again every morning. Okay? All right. It gets kind of towards, you know, it gets to where you're like picking off single fuzz balls from the corners. Okay? I have these fuzz balls. I asked my lama, where do they come from? It's an interesting philosophical question. But you just walk in your room and there's fuzz balls there. And you lean over to get them, and the wind from your body pushes them ahead, and you chase them around the room, you know? And then you clean them, you catch all the fuzz balls, and then the next morning there's more of them. And I don't know where they come from. And we were talking about it. It's interesting. Anyway, probably can find a fuzz ball, even if you cleaned up yesterday. Okay, go around the room, look for something. He says, I don't care if your room's already straight. Look for a fuzz ball. Like, go around and try to find a fuzz ball, or try to find some dust on a counter or something. Okay, you can use all your ACI scripture books. They have dust on them, and you can clean them off a little bit. Okay, find something to clean in your room. After you get the basic things straightened and everything's clean and elegant, every day keep looking for something. Don't stop. Never stop. Never don't do it. Okay? So you're going to get like trying to find little specks of lint on the carpet and stuff like that. Okay? Go for it. Take them up. Okay? Namta dena matapa raptunre. Taman yinreshin du dorja, chidorja. Some people do more than one meditation session in a day. Some people do two, some people three, some people four. Some people do in the morning and then again in the evening. Some people do during the afternoon. Okay? He says, at least once a day. You have to do it at least once a day. But if you can, do it before every meditation session. If you're doing four sessions a day, clean the room four times a day. Okay. How long? You can just do it for 3, 4, 5 minutes. It's okay. Okay. But there's a certain kind of thinking you have to do. There's a certain kind of thought process you have to follow while you're cleaning. And if you do it, you'll end up like that guy who taught the nuns, you see? All right? Chidorcha. Chidorcha wa itzil yang kunlong kongta seltap ne rancheng ki gyu ki jibbe nyang nil nam chakme mpadang. While you are cleaning, let's say I have this thing, okay? I have a little carpet that I bought with my lama. And it's dark. And every day there's lint on it. And I don't know where it comes from. I think there's little creatures that come out at night and spread lint on it. But little pieces of white lint. And they look bad. Like, before Lama comes over, I spend a lot of time cleaning the carpet. Picking them off because they I don't know, there's something about the vacuum cleaner. You run it like this and the lint stays there. So you get down on your hands and knees and you pick the lint out piece by piece. You go like this, you know. And you wrestle the little pieces of white lint out of the carpet. But while you're doing it, think that you are cleaning your heart and other people's hearts. Okay? That's important. Okay? My friend's a little bit angry sometimes. Ha, I got it. You know, my other friend eats too much. Pop, I got that one. My other friend is too lazy to come to meditation and yoga on the second day of the program. I got that one. Okay? And then you go through the carpet and you pick out stuff. It's very healthy exercise, okay? You are serving yourself and other people, okay, as you pick the lint out. So it's not enough that you do it mindlessly. The cleaning of the room becomes a meditation in itself, got it? It becomes a pre-meditation. You're already starting to clean your mind for the meditation as you pick the lint out of the carpet, okay? It's very beautiful, all right? All right. We'll go for about another 3 minutes. Zomin Chang Sumki Yagyal Sange Kishing Jomi Gyur Mikte. This is beautiful. Say Xingjong. Xingjong. Xing means a field, but it's the Tibetan word for a Buddha paradise.
Okay.
Xing means a paradise. A world, an entire earth, which is a paradise.
Okay.
Xing is called Xing. Zhong means to create it.
Okay.
There are certain karmas you can do which are specific to Xingzhong.
Okay.
One of them, for example, is to help build a temple or a retreat cabin. These are Zele Chungwe Gewa, special kind of karma.
Okay.
It creates your Buddha paradise.
Okay.
If you help, a lot of people here I know help the Diamond Mountain, they help build the retreat cabins, which are big and comfortable and expensive, okay? And beautiful. But that's a special karma. If you do that kind of service, you are creating your Buddha paradise.
Okay.
You are creating the physical environment in which you will live when you are enlightened. Okay. Chakta Chepa, cleaning up your room, is the same karma.
Okay.
The act of cleaning up your room before meditation is a specific karmic seed which will create the environment around you when you become enlightened.
Okay.
It will create the physical environment around you when you become a Buddha. It's very cool. Okay. That's called Xingzhong.
Right.
And that's part of a threefold practice called Zogmin Jang. Say Zog Min Jang. And he mentions it here, and I'll explain that and then we'll stop for it. We'll take a break, okay? Say Zog Min Jang. So I'm gonna give you in the scripture, when stuff comes that is not explained, I go to other scriptures and extract things. And then I will bring them to you. You know, I'm not going to skip over a single word. Okay. I'm going to a different scripture to explain to you what those three steps are. Zogmin Chang. This particular scripture is, I don't know what that is exactly. Okay. Dedar Zogmin Chang Sum Le Munam Yosu Zope Tseni. The first step, Zog, means to complete your prayers. Okay. The coming true of your prayers. Your prayers are answered. Okay, it means so. Chini la seje di nyamba shakshin bing non ne shendun beme hundu du chebe gyu ki gewit sawa nupat yong zopa dang. It also refers to the ability to serve others spontaneously. Okay, there's a word called hundup. Say hun dup. Hundup. It's a common Tibetan name. Okay, so a lot of monks are called hundup. Hundup is a very beautiful idea. I don't know if there's an English word. It means if you pray for many years that you could help other people, many other people, then there will come a time in your life when it becomes automatic, okay? 1,000 people will show up at your talk, okay? It will just happen. You don't plan it, and you don't do much. You just show up, and 1,000 people show up. That's called hundup, okay? Buddhists have it at an extreme level. They don't have to think to help others. The moment they wake up in the morning, a billion bodies burst forth from their body to billions of planets. And they're just having English muffins. Okay? Like they're not thinking about it. And suddenly there's a billion bodies on a billion planets taking care of people. Okay? That's called hundup. That's to Dzogpa, to complete that is the meaning of Dzog. Okay? That's another meaning of Dzog.
Okay?
Dzog. She said, Duja Semchen Yongsu Mimbe Tse, Chuku Shin Kepa Chengi Jambe Tse. Min means the capacity to teach other people and to ripen their minds. Okay? People's minds are like, I don't know. There's some kinds of glue, right, where you have to heat it. What's that stuff inside the glue? What's it called? No, there's a word for it. Catalyst, yeah. Mimba means people have in their, all beings have in their mind an immature substance, an unripened substance. And then when you become skillful at teaching, you can trigger that catalyst and their mind will change. Okay, so that's called min. So now we have zok, jang, and min. These are three high practices. These are three kinds of high practices. Zok means, in the end, you are able to serve billions of people spontaneously. Min means, when you teach, you are able to trigger a catalyst in people's minds and their minds change, okay? And then jang means what? Xing jang means what? Xing jong. Yeah, but jong it. Create it. Create it. Build retreat cabins. You know, clean up your room before meditation. And that's the karma that's going to create a Buddha paradise for you. Okay? Very beautiful. Okay? I feel like it's kind of lame just to study all the time and meditate all the time and not do any like hands-on work to help other people. And I think you can start to get kind of unreal if you just meditate all the time or you just study all the time. So I'm really encouraging people to do some hands-on stuff. There should be a balance, right? You should do some hands-on stuff. So, no, but I think it's very important. I think just to, in my life, I've seen the unbalance that can come if you just meditate all the time or you practice all the time and you don't serve other people with your hands. So I encourage you to come tomorrow and you can learn more about volunteering with them, okay? It makes you happy. It's the secret to happiness to do something like that every week, okay? You can't just meditate. You got to meditate and you have to serve. And then you're a complete balanced person. And if you just meditate all the time, you get really weird. And you get unbalanced and unhappy and you do strange things. And then if you're serving other people also, your life is balanced and you become a nice person and a happy person. So like if you can't sleep or you're not particularly happy, come tomorrow. And I think it's the magic thing, okay, that will make you happy all the time. Okay, 2:15 tomorrow. Okay, all right, here we go. Lamchungi namta lechuwa tar ngat ne dul pango chima pango. While you are cleaning up your room, while you are chasing fuzzballs, I love chasing them. You can say dul pang chima pang in Tibetan. It means, how should I translate that? I clean the dirt. I clean the impurities. Too fancy, right? You're not going to say that while you're chasing fuzzballs. You can just say, I clean the dirt, okay? I'm cleaning the dirt. I'm cleaning the impurity, okay? You can say whatever you want. Make it a little mantra. Make your own little mantra, you know? I'm cleaning the dirt. I'm cleaning the smell, okay? What's it mean? In the scriptures, in the 2,500-year-old scriptures, the sutras, there's a verse, there's a longer verse that was taught by the Buddha, okay? It says, it goes like this. Dulni sadul mayan ducha dul. Dulni duchak mingte dulki min. Kepa dhaki dulne nampang pa. Deni sangiten apayo yin. This is a verse where you can say, this dirt is not just dirt. This dirt is my own negative emotions. This fuzzball, we could probably make a verse in English, right? This fuzzball is my anger. This fuzzball is my jealousy. And chase the fuzzballs around the room, okay? I do that. Or pick the lint off the carpet, because everything else is clean already, right? Pick something. Dulni ducha mingde dulki min. Fuzzball isn't a name for fuzzball. Fuzzball is a name for my own negativities, okay? I'm not cleaning fuzzballs or lint. I'm cleaning my own mind. I'm thinking about cleaning my own mind. Okay? A person like that understands the teachings of the Buddha. Okay? A person who chases fuzzballs around the room, a person who sits on the carpet for the first 20 minutes of meditation session and picks lint off of it, but meditates while they're doing it. You see, I'm cleaning my anger. Yesterday I got angry at somebody. I take it. I clean it. Yesterday I got jealous of somebody. I clean it like that. Okay, this is a practice. Then he says, you are really practicing the teachings of the Buddha. Do it with your anger. Do it with your desires. Do it with your misunderstanding of your reality. Okay? Timin lajarte dunshin gedarche. And clean your room doing that little exercise in your mind. I'm cleaning my mind. I'm cleaning my heart. Okay? You get a dayan dacha. Okay, this is cool. And this is on your homework, so pay attention. It's a practice in the Lam Rim. See, Lam Rim is the kind of book we're studying. Lam Rim means the idiot guide to enlightenment. Okay? Lam Rim means step-by-step guide to enlightenment. That's called Lam Rim. There are like, I don't know, 20, 30 steps that you have to go through, you know? He says, while you're cleaning your room, each fuzzball that you find, or each piece of lint that you find, can represent the negativity that you're working against at the step of the Lam Rim that you have reached in your life. Okay? Some people are on step number one. What's step number one in the Lam Rim? What's the first step of all spiritual practice? Find a teacher. Find a teacher. Okay? That's the first step. Find a teacher that you trust. You know? Like, grill them. Dig into their life. See if there's any scandals. You see what I mean? No, work on it and ask around and say, is this a good teacher or not? Okay? And then decide. What would be the opposite of that? You see, you're supposed to build up a sense of trust in a teacher that you have checked out carefully. Okay? And then you have to commit to them. You see what I mean? So whoever it is, it could be anybody, but whoever your teacher is, examine them, check them. And then if you don't doubt them. After you take them as a teacher, don't doubt them, okay? Check them carefully before you take them. Don't take them easily. But after you take them, then don't doubt them, okay? And then when you're practicing the first of the Lam Rim, when you grab a fuzzball, you're supposed to think what? This is my doubt, okay? You pick the lint. This is the doubt I had yesterday about my teacher. This is the doubt I had the day before about my teacher. You see what I mean? If you're on Chiwin Mitapa, what's Chiwin Mitapa? Death meditation. If you're doing death meditation, right, and you catch a fuzzball, what are you supposed to think? This is complacency with my life. This is thinking I have time. You know? This is thinking that I can wait another day to meditate. You see what I mean? This is thinking I'm not going to die today. You know, the death meditation goal is to think, when you wake up, you say, I'm dying today. I'm going to die today. Decide. You wake up, you say, I'm going to die before tonight is finished. I'm dying. If I die today, how would I spend my day? What would I do with my day? You see what I mean? And never spend a day that you don't think like that. You see? Never do a day that you think, this day I'm not doing what I want so I can do something tomorrow. Forget it. You're going to wake up and say, I'm going to die this morning. Okay? I'm sorry, by the tonight, I will die. Then what will you do? How will you spend the day? Never spend a day in any other way. Spending a day in any other way is the fuzzball. You see what I mean? So it depends on what level you're at in the Lam Rim teachings. What's the final level in the Lam Rim teachings? He says here, all the way up to Tsenzin. All the way up to Tsenzin. Say Tsenzin. 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 Tsenzin is an abbreviation of Semadzimba. Semadzimba means, I'll give you an example of Semadzimba, okay? So you go to work and your boss yells at you because you didn't finish. Let's say you work at Macy's and you messed up something on the cash register. And the boss comes and yells at you, right? To think that that boss comes from their own side is semadzin, okay? To think that that boss yelling comes from their own side is called senzin, okay? And it's the ultimate mistake, okay? Why is the boss getting angry at you? According to this system, why does the boss get angry at you? Because you got angry at somebody last month, okay, or last week. You did, whatever you're seeing is is coming back from something you did last week. If the boss yells at you and you hold your wisdom and you say, oh, she's yelling at me because I yelled at my kids 2 weeks ago, and you understand, then what will happen? What will you do to your boss? Will you yell at them? No, it would be the stupidest thing, because then the kids would yell at you next week. Got it? Okay? Whatever you do to other people will come back to you. If the boss yells at you at Macy's after you mess up on the cash register, that's coming from whom? Whose fault is it? It's your fault. So get out of the habit of blaming other people. Blaming other people sends it. And it's the final, that's the final step of the Lam Rim. What's the last stage of the Lam Rim? What's the final practice in the Lam Rim? Laktong. What's Laktong? Vipassana. If you want to corrupt it, you could say Vipassana. Vipassana. What is that? Understanding of emptiness, understanding of reality. What's that mean? The boss comes from me. The boss comes from me. So if you have reached the end of your Lam Rim study, what year is that going to be? 2021, I think. Okay? Seriously. All right. If you reach the final classes, you'll be studying Zen Zin. And in those final classes, you will still be cleaning up your room. Okay? 8 years from now, you will still be cleaning up your room every morning. And when you pick up the fuzzball, it represents what? In those classes. Thinking the boss comes from their own side. Got it? So whatever practice you're working on, whatever negativity within yourself you're working on, in this year of your life, that's what the fuzzballs are. Got it? All right? If you have a problem with anger, the fuzzball is anger. If you have a problem with jealousy, the fuzzball is jealousy. Got it? You have to think of the fuzzballs as something. You can't just clean up your room because Geshe Michael said before meditation, I'm supposed to clean up my room. That's not the first of the six practices. It's not. You have to meditate while you clean up your room. And you're warming up your mind for meditation. You see, it's not just cleaning up your room. Okay. Duni sheso sensing duki par ngak ne kyor tsu dang. Yiki mitsul rang kan la nyamlen chebe kap dan tumbar kagir shepa cha. So just plug in whatever thing you're working on, okay, becomes the fuzzball. All right? Whatever problem you have in your life right now is your fuzzball. My husband is always criticizing me. He's the fuzzball, okay? The one that you created, okay? All right, here we go. Nawa dange so ki chakta rangi che matupse. This is really interesting, okay? Nawa dange so ki chakta che somebody's asking him a question. What if a person is extremely ill or extremely old and they can't physically clean their room? What if they don't have the energy anymore? Or what if they're laying in bed sick? Once you get really old or sick, how do you do this practice? Somebody asks him a question. This is common in the monastery, okay? I mean, monks live a long time. There's all these like zillion-year-old monks walking around the monastery, and they can't walk very well, and they're really old. Okay, there's a lot of monks like that. Tibet was also a harsh environment, and people got old fast. Okay, it was rare to live past 50. All right. Tipse getu soki chekav rangi tsikyor sheyiki mikpacha. If you're too old or too infirm to do your own sweeping, let your disciple do it for you. But you should recite the verses while they're doing it. Okay? I'm cleaning my jealousy. I'm cleaning my jealousy. And you should mentally think, he's cleaning my jealousy for me. Okay? Like that. You still have to do the verbal recitation, and you still have to do the meditation while your disciple's cleaning up your room. Okay? I wish I had one like that. Mikpacha. Deta kunlong gya che chung ki khepar ki chakma rere gya pa lang penyong ki khepar shin tu che. Depending on the strength of your motivation, every time you make a pass with the broom, you are collecting incredibly karmic incredible karmic seeds. Okay? Every time the broom makes one pass in sweeping up the room, you are collecting extraordinary karmic seeds. If you'd meditate while you're doing it. Got it? Okay. Mipacha. Gochundu to shit sik te gyapo chembo deshe mupam tochik la deta mupadang yana tochik la nam tu se su mupachin la parche min jumadang. There's a custom in Tibet. Do you know this thing, the mandala, right? Most of you know this mandala offering, right? It has a symbolism. We do a prayer. We'll do it at the end of the night, okay? This is a mudra, right? This is a hand gesture that represents the whole world. And according to Buddhist geography, the world is flat. And you got to be careful if you get towards the side because you will fall off, okay? The world is flat. There are four continents, which are these four fingers here. And then there's a mountain in the middle, which was Mount Everest in the old days, okay? So the world was supposedly shaped like this, okay? And then all kinds of different creatures live on these, on the different places, okay? We live on Lhotshambaling, Jambudvipa is the southern continent, okay? We live on that continent. And you know why the sky is blue? The sun passes this way, around the central mountain. And the central mountain is made of four separate jewels. One quarter of the mountain is made of sapphire. When the sun shines, when the sun circles around to our continent, it reflects against the sapphire, and that's why the sky is blue. Okay? This is ancient Buddhist geography. Got it? So, on top of Mount Meru, on top of Sumeru, are special beings. They live like a godlike existence. They're like, did you see that movie? What is that, Zeus and all those guys? Like Loki and Thor? Okay, like these guys like Loki and Thor, they live up here, okay, on top. There's called 33. It's called the heaven of the 33, Sumjusatsum. And there, four of them are very powerful, like tough guys. And they protect that place. And they're called the four kings, okay? Got it? So there's a custom in Tibet. You can write the names of the four kings on pieces of paper about this big, and then you glue them on your four walls. And that protects the meditation room, okay? So if you want to do that, talk to Ningbo. He'll give you the name. That's called a to. We have some to. That's called a to. To means a meditation marker. When you do a long retreat, you're supposed to put these meditation markers around your house or on the door, okay? So ideally, if you want to try, you can do the four kings, piece of paper with the four kings around the room. Or if you're too lazy to do that, you can make one piece of paper, stick it near the front door, and imagine that it's all four, okay? One of the four kings is called Vaishravana or Kubera. This is related to prosperity. Okay. If you think that that king is on that piece of paper, then you will have less, what do you call, obstacles to your meditation. Sutin dapa soki neche sun. But then Paboku Rinpoche says, you want real protection, okay? You want magical protection, use these four pieces of paper. Then he says, if you want real protection, keep your morality. And that's the key to meditation, okay? Don't kill. Don't kill anything. Don't kill bugs. Don't kill birds. Don't eat meat, okay? Don't take things. Don't steal things. Don't cheat on your taxes, okay? Sexual misconduct, don't fool around with other people's partners, don't even look at them like that. Don't lie like that, okay? If you want the karma for meditation, it's to never harm another living creature. Keep your, what do you call it? Restrain yourself. You want things, you want to hurt people to get things, don't do it. Restrain yourself. then your meditation will be perfect. And then you don't need those four pieces of paper. That's what he's saying. Forget the magic. Go for the ethical living. And then that your meditation will be good. Okay, got it? That's the real key to meditation. All right. We have a few more minutes, okay? Be patient. If you think your butt hurts tonight, wait till the eighth day. Okay. I had to sit in the monsoons. It was 120 outside, 43 degrees centigrade. And it was raining all day, you know? And the roof was leaking. And we were crushed into a small room, 40 students. And I said, when I get to be a teacher, I'm going to make them suffer. Okay. Jasa chembo soksu totsi pa midewe tambachi loksh shi gyalchen de shi shir sam chopa je jamgun rinpoche sungyun du yut. There was a lama named J. Jamgun Rinpoche. Say J. Jamgun Rinpoche. And he expressed an opinion about this four pieces of paper. He said, look, we're living in the great monasteries. There are three great monasteries in Tibet, Sera, Ganden, and Debo. You're from? Your lineage is Sera. You are now Sera. Okay? If somebody asks you, what's Drebung? How's Drebung Monastery, Ganden? You have to say they suck. I'm from Sera. I'm Sera lineage. You are Sera lineage, okay? But this lama expressed the opinion that you didn't have to put the papers up in a monastery because it would get messy and there'd be papers lying around everywhere. So he said, you can visualize the four walls of your room as being the four kings. Okay? The wall itself is one of the kings. Each of the four walls are one of the four kings. Okay? I looked up, I'm always trying to find the dates of each lama, where they lived, who was their teacher. That nobody has ever identified this lama, but I did. Because he wrote a letter to the sixth Panchen Lama one day. Sorry, sixth Panchen Lama wrote a letter to him. And we have that letter. So that dates him. At least we know his dates. The sixth Panchen Lama was Losan Thubten Chöki Nyima, and he lived 1883 to 1937. So this lama, who said you can think of the four pieces of paper as your walls, lived around 1900. Okay? Okay. That completes the first half of the first preliminary. Now we're starting the second half of the first preliminary. What's the first half of the first preliminary? Clean up your room. Straighten up your room. It doesn't have to be sweeping, okay? I mean, for most of us, it's picking up socks and stuff. I found, you know how many pieces of underwear I found under my bed? Anyway, I couldn't figure out where they all had gone, you know? So the next subject, which is the second half of the first preliminary, is called Ku Sung Tuk Ten. Say Ku Sung Tuk Ten. Okay? And then we'll stop. So this is homework question number three, okay, Nicole? That's the Tibetan word for an altar, okay? You have to set up an altar in your room. You have to have an altar, right? I think one of the most exciting things about Buddhism was I grew up Christian, right? My church is not far from here where I grew up. And altars just belonged in church. To say, Mom, I want to have an altar in my room, your parents would say you were crazy or something, right? I mean? And then if you said, I wanted to do my own Holy Communion in my room, they would say, no, you can't do that. The priest has to do it. You know what I mean? And when I first started studying Buddhism 38 years ago, I was so excited because the monks told me, you set up your own altar in your own room and you do your own communion. You see what I mean? You do your own. You can still go to church on Sundays, but why not go to church on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday in your own home? You know, set up your own altar. Make a sacred space in your own home. And you commune with God in your bedroom or you know, in your living room. You make a space in your home and you set up an altar you know, what do you call it? A comm link to God, you know, in your own house. And that was so cool to me when I first met the Tibetans. I was like, oh, I have permission to have an altar in my own home and to use it, an active altar in my own home. In Tibetan, that's called Ku Sung Tuk Ten. Say Ku Sung Tuk Ten. The word for altar in Tibetan is headquarters of the holy words, holy deeds, words, and thoughts. Headquarters of the holy deeds, words, and thoughts. Ku Sung Tuk Ten. The word for altar is headquarters of holy actions, words, and thoughts. I like it. I really like it. Okay. Then when you set up an altar, it's traditional to put upon the altar three things, actually four, okay? Something to represent an enlightened being's actions. How does an enlightened being act physically in the world? Something to represent how they speak, and something to represent how they think. And that makes it an altar. Then you've got an altar, okay? Get a little table, buy some nice cloth, you know, set it up in your house somewhere quiet, but you got to have certain things on the table. And we're going to go through that, right? We're going to go through that. Just so you can do your homework, and it's because we only have 5 more minutes, I'll tell you what they are, okay? Ku means like something to remind you of what an enlightened being does. What does an enlightened being do? Let's say your own personal, if you find a teacher in your life, and it doesn't have to be me, it could be anybody. It could be your wife. It could be, one guy told me it was his dog. I'm not quite sure. But someone that you relate to as your teacher, in our tradition, you should come to recognize that they are an enlightened angel who came to this planet to help you. Okay? They're not a normal person. Your wife or your husband or your meditation teacher or your yoga teacher or whoever you relate to as your personal teacher, they are not a normal human being. They are some other kind of being. And they came to this world to help you. Okay? And they have the power to be on many worlds at the same time, helping many people. And we're supposed to think that about our teacher, whoever you decide to take as your teacher. And it's up to you. Teachers are like gloves. I mean, to say one glove would fit every hand is foolish, you know. Everybody needs a different kind of teacher. Some people need a very straight, you know, serious teacher with a shaved head. And some people need a little bit wacky one. And everybody needs a different kind of teacher. So, but find, in your life, you must find your teacher. That's one of your goals in your life. But when you take your teacher, then you should believe that they are here masquerading as a human, and they're not human, okay? You're supposed to think like that. That's the quality of an enlightened being's action, physical body action. So you should have a representation of that on your altar, okay? So have your teacher's picture on your altar, okay? It doesn't mean this is my teacher's picture. It means this is the picture of the being who came to this world to help me and to pretend they were human. Okay? Like that. So you should have a picture of your teacher. In our tradition, in our immediate lineage, we use Jetsal Kapa. He was the teacher of the first Dalai Lama. The statue, the higher statue here, is a picture of Jetsal Kapa. So in our tradition, if you choose to, you can have an image of Jetsal Kapa, who was the teacher of the first Dalai Lama, who lived about 600 years ago. Or you can put your own teacher's photograph. It doesn't matter. Then you should have one Buddha image on the altar, okay? That also represents the physical activity of a Buddha. In this case, we have a small Buddha on the end there, a statue. That's to remember who started all this stuff in this planet. On this planet, who started these teachings? And we say Lord Buddha, okay? So you can have a, or if you're more attracted to Tara or something like that, that's fine too. If you prefer a lady Buddha, You can put Tara. It doesn't matter. Okay. There should be one Buddha on your altar who's not your teacher, and there should be your teacher. Okay? Or Tsongkhapa. Okay? That's, the tradition is to keep two statues. One to remember your teacher, which is traditionally, you use Jetsun Kapa's outer form to represent your teacher. And then the Buddha, some kind of Buddha, like it could be Tara, a female Buddha or a male Buddha, to remember where all this stuff came from. Okay? And you can get these statues online nowadays. We had to struggle to find them, but now you can just, you know, it's probably on Amazon. I don't know. We'll talk more about that. As a representation of the Buddha's speech, enlightened speech, it's traditional to put a scripture on the altar. Can somebody, Kathy Greig, can you stand up and just hold it up? It's on the left here behind the candle. There's a scripture. So this is just a Tibetan scripture. This is what they look like in Tibet. Okay? You can hold it up. And you should have one scripture on your altar. Okay? It could be an English book. It doesn't matter. It could be a book. It could be a Bible. It could be a Quran. It could be whatever you feel is calls to you. Okay? Whatever book you feel is holy. By tradition, we put a text of the Prajnaparamita, the shorter text of the Prajnaparamita. One of those is the Diamond Cutter Sutra. So if you can get a translation of the Diamond Cutter, that's very appropriate to have on your altar to represent the Buddha's speech. What's so special about the Buddha's speech? Speech of the Buddha has 60 different qualities. It's called Yenlak Duchu. What's the most important of the 60 qualities of a Buddha's speech? Remember? Say. Yeah, the highest quality of a Buddha's speech is that they speak in Sanskrit, okay? All Buddhas speak in Sanskrit. But everybody hears their own language. Everybody in the audience hears their own language, okay? This is the capacity of a Buddha. As you get farther along the path to enlightenment, you learn to speak different people's languages, okay? You're able to get up in front of a group of bankers in Zurich and give a talk about financial investing and Buddhism. Or if you go to Vietnam, you can give a talk about socialism and Buddhism. You see what I mean? And then you go to South America and you can give a talk in an art museum. You see what I mean? As you progress along the path, you should be able to relate to different people and speak differently to different people. In the end, you will be able to speak a single word of Sanskrit and everybody will hear their own language. That's the power of your speech, okay? But it doesn't happen in a day, okay? It changes year to year. And you become able to speak to different people. I think it's very frustrating for people when the teacher only speaks in one language. I mean, they get up and they're like, the Dhammakaya is characterized by the shunyata of the karma dhatu, in which the, you know, and everybody's like, you know, speak in people's own language. Get in the habit. One night, I used to travel to New York every day to support the refugees. 15 years, 4 hours of commuting a day. Okay? And one day the bus broke down outside of a go-go bar. And I was like 3 miles from home, you know? And there's no phone within, this is before cell phones. There's no phone within like 10 miles, you know? So I'm like, okay, I gotta go in the go-go bar. And, you know, this guy grabs me and sits me down. He says, hey man, you know, and I was waiting for Art Engel to come in and pick me up. And I taught him in the bar, in the go-go bar. I taught this guy at the bar for like half an hour. I taught him Buddhism. You got to speak people's language, okay? Like in the prison, you guys know, you can't throw all these Sanskrit words at people, you know? You got to speak their language, right? You got to put it in their language, okay? Anyway, that scripture is meant to represent the day when you can speak everybody's language. You can go to a yoga talk and talk yoga. You can go to a business talk and talk business. You can go to a Dharma talk and talk Dharma, okay? That scripture represents that capacity. Okay, last thing, then we're done. What was the third quality? on the altar. The Buddha's state of mind, the way the Buddha thinks, okay? The highest, what is the, oh, traditionally you can use a small stupa, which is a little offering shrine, but Pabongku Rinpoche says, I want you to use a bell and a dorje. So can somebody hold that up? Darcy, you want to try? Is there a bell and a dorje there? I don't know. No? Oh, well. Jigme? Is there one? No? Oh, it got left at home. Maybe the Buddhists don't think in this place. Anyway, there's a. I'll show you tomorrow. There's a sacred bell, a metal bell, and then there's a little thunderbolt that you hold in your hand. These represent the way a Buddha thinks, okay? The bell represents their understanding of ultimate reality. The dorje represents their compassion, okay? They can love people and at the same time understand that those people are coming from them. Okay? That's a big love. Did you catch that? They understand that the yelling boss is coming from them, and they still love the yelling boss. Okay? And they can hold their mind on both of those things at the same time. And only a Buddha can do that. We can try, but only a Buddha can really do it. So, those are the three things that you need on an altar. You need a bell and a little dorje, and you need, I'll show you tomorrow what they look like. And you need a Buddha statue or a picture of your teacher, and you need some kind of sacred book on the altar. Then that's a Ku Sung Tuk Ten. That becomes an altar. It has the three things on it. Something to remind you of how enlightened beings act. Something to remind you of how they talk. And something to remind you of how they think. And that becomes an altar. That makes it an altar. Okay? It's very cool. It's very cool. All right? And we'll talk more about it tomorrow. We have a tradition that at the end of a class, you can put your hands like this, or if you want to get frustrated, you can try to do this. But it's a tradition in Buddhism that we offer, we've made a big good karma tonight. We learned some cool stuff tonight. Give away that karma to the people in this city, okay? To all the people in Phoenix, offer the good karma we made tonight. You ready? Brooks, are you ready? Okay. Loud.
Shina chepa shum yeda vayana nami Namah Kumi Topa Shum.